Greenside, the IGA podcast.
Also, Mike McCoy, the 2013 U.S.
Zach Johnson, now a two-time major champion after becoming the winner of the 144th Open Championship.
All right, welcome to Greenside, the IGA podcast. Clint Brown here with you. Got guest Ken Shaw, 2012 Iowa Golf Hall of Fame inductee, originally from Waterloo, owner of Ken Shaw Golf. Ken, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Clint. Good morning.
Yeah, good to have you. Why don't we just kick off from kind of the beginning? How'd you get started in the game as a junior?
Well, Clint, you know, I grew up in Waterloo. And you know, we have a pretty avid golf family. My mom and dad are both avid golfers. They're in their mid-80s and they still play a lot of golf. So we grew up playing the municipal courses in Waterloo, and I'll tell you, Clint, back in those days, back in the 1970s, if you were a junior player in Waterloo, Iowa, you could play the entire season for $5.
Wow.
A $5 junior pass, you'd have access to the three municipal courses, Burns Park, Gates Park, and South Hills. As long as you teed off before 11 o'clock, Monday through Friday, you could play for $5 for the entire year. Now, if you wanted to go into a full-on season pass with no restrictions, I think the price was like $32. And so we had tremendous access to the courses. We had, it was just a really good vibe back then. There were so many good players back then in Waterloo. There was probably, you know, by the time I was in high school, there was probably 20 plus junior players around there shooting around par, which is really quite something.
Wow. Yeah, that's remarkable. Ken, I'm guessing you were probably like a lot of juniors back then. You'd probably have days where you played from sun up to sundown, or played, you said you had some restrictions, so you probably tried to squeeze in as many holes as you could when you were able to, weren't you?
Well, there would be days where we would seriously play 36, 45 holes a day. You know, Burns is a very easy course to get around, and we would go round and round and round and round. We would ride our bikes to the course. I had a locker there right at the golf course. I kept my clubs in there, and it was a fun time. We, you know, Burns had a practice range where we all had our own shag bags. We'd go down to the range, and you'd mark your golf balls, you'd hit them out in the range, and you'd go pick them up. You know, it was fun times.
And tell us about some of those players that you grew up with that maybe some of our listeners don't know about. If you've got some good memories of them, I'm sure.
Oh, sure. You know, there was a couple players that were just, you know, a little younger than myself, my younger brother's age. You never quite know how good somebody's going to get, but I'll tell you, there was a young guy who was, I think 3 years younger than me. His name was Clark Burrows, and mm-hmm. Clark went on to play for Ohio State. And he won the NCAA championship. He went on to play in the Masters and played golf for a number of years on the PGA Tour. We had a young guy by the name of Doug Dunicky, about the same age as Clark. You know, Doug went on to play golf for a living for quite a long time. He shot 59 on the buy.com tour, and just a lot of just really, really strong players back then. We all had a great mentor. His name was Don Narveson. Mm-hmm. Don was the high school coach at West Waterloo. Don is in the Iowa Golf Hall of Fame. He kind of brought us up. We all looked up to a guy by the name of Jack Rule, who, yep. Jack's in his early 80s now. Jack went on to play on the PGA Tour and actually won a couple of times out there. And, you know, we all looked up to Jack. I used to caddy for him when I was a youngster. So he played a big part in my development as a player, along with Don Narveson and, of course, my dad.
Ken, growing up, and I know it's different than it is now. Were you playing just a lot of local stuff, or did you travel a little bit within the state, or kind of what that looked like for you as far as kind of competitively early on for you?
Well, when I was a junior golfer, we didn't have, you know, the AJGA or the right. Hurricane Tour or even the Iowa, you know, PGA Junior Tour, which mm-hmm. is such a great place to play. You know, it was we pretty much played in just little junior tournaments around, you know, our local area. We kind of had a really good junior program on the municipal courses. It was kind of a team structure.
Okay.
You know, we went and played, and we tried to qualify for the, you know, the IGA Junior, which I was lucky enough to finish, I think, third one year in it. And so it was not like it is today. There was really nothing organized. Junior players would, you know, I'd end up going to men's tournaments with my dad, you know. There was always a weekend tournament somewhere around the state. We played in quite a few of those as well.
Well, like you mentioned, it sounds like the competition just within Waterloo was pretty stout, wasn't it?
It really was. I'm not sure how many state championships that West Waterloo won under Don Narveson, but it was substantial. It was substantial enough to where Don won the national high school coach of the year award one year. And we were all really proud of that. And, Narv was a funny guy. He was really a golfing purist, you know? Mm-hmm. So just a couple of examples. You know, when you're having a high school golf meet, the coaches always get together for a coaches meeting before we tee off, and they decide whether we're going to play the ball up or down, play the ball as it lies or not, you know. So the ground conditions in the springtime, you know, you'll get courses that, you know, that the coaches decide to you can improve your lie out there on mm-hmm. the course. Well, Narv would come back from those meetings and the times that the coaches decided that we were going to play the ball up in the fairways, Narv would tell the team, he would say something like, well, the coaches decide we're playing the ball up, but you guys are going to play it as it lies today. And so we were almost at a competitive disadvantage, or so we thought at the time, you know, but ultimately it helped us learn how to play from a variety of different lies. And so sure. Another thing that Narv was kind of an eccentric character at times. And one year he decided that we were to refer to our clubs in the, like this, old world nomenclature. For example, you know, you don't call your club a five wood, you call it a cleek. Okay.
Yep.
Or your three wood is known as a spoon, or as in your irons are mashies and mid mashies and you know, and so we kind of took a stab at that. I don't know how long that lasted, but that's kind of Don Narveson in a nutshell right there. And you know, he definitely brought the best out in us.
That's awesome. That's a great story, Ken. So after high school, what transpired after high school as far as your golf career?
Well, you know, on our high school team, you know, we won state my junior year. I think we lost by a shot or two my senior year. So we had a really good team. I wasn't the number one player. I was down there like maybe three or four on the team, but we had some really good players. I never got recruited in state. And so I actually, I walked on the golf team at New Mexico State down in Las Cruces. There was a pro at Sunnyside Country Club, an assistant pro who was from El Paso, Texas and knew the coach down there. And so I wrote the coach a couple of letters and so our agreement was if I went down and walked on and made the top five and maintained that position on the team for my first semester, that I would get some scholarship money going forward. And so, you know, I bought a bus ticket, went down to Las Cruces sight unseen on a Greyhound bus. And actually it's kind of a funny story. When I got to Las Cruces, it was in the kind of the middle of the night, there was a boat dealership across from the bus depot. I went and took my stuff, threw it in the back of the boat, slept there, called my coach in the morning. He came and picked me up and helped me get checked in at school, and then qualify and started a couple days after that. We played six rounds in a row. I played some of the best golf of my life and actually made the top five and was able to, get a scholarship going forward after that. So college golf was quite an experience. The first tournament we played was big college tournament. It was called the Tucker Invitational up in Albuquerque, and just an incredibly strong field. So we had, schools like UCLA, Corey Pavin played. We had Houston. Yeah. Couples played in that one. And the king of college golf at that time was Bobby Clampett. He played for BYU. And he played in that tournament as well. And so just, had just a lot of great players playing. I was exposed to a lot of great players in college. And so that was really helpful.
So before we get going too far, I just want to make sure I got that right, Ken. So you show up to Las Cruces, it's in the middle of the night, and you stay in the boat your first night. You find a boat, an open boat across the street there.
That's right.
That's incredible. Oh my gosh. That's what we need. We need stories like that. Untold stories of golfers. Holy cow. That's awesome. Yeah. So, okay. So what years were you in Las Cruces?
I was there in 79, 80, and 81.
Okay.
Yeah. Played there 3 years. And then I actually came back to Iowa and I had a pretty good summer. That summer I won the state AM was in contention quite a bit. So I turned pro that fall and went to work at Ames Golf and Country Club for a year as an assistant. And then I moved on from there to Wakanda Club for 3 years as an assistant. And that's kind of when my game started to develop even a little bit more during that period of time. I played when I was an assistant pro at Wakanda, I played nearly every day, either before I reported to work or after I was done. I just really logged a lot of rounds on that great golf course.
Ken, I had the 1981 Iowa Amateur down here that I wanted to talk to you about. What do you remember from that?
Well, the state AM was at Beaver Hills that year and in Cedar Falls. And so I was, somewhat familiar with the course, and I was really playing well at the time. And I remember the final round quite well. I was paired with Brad Shucott from Des Moines and a young high school player by the name of Tim Joslin. Okay. And I just remember the final hole so well. I had a one shot lead going into the final hole and kind of hit a wayward drive a little bit left and ended up hitting my second shot in a greenside bunker. Tim Joslin hit his second shot over the green. We had a front pin that day and he actually holed it's one of the best putts I've ever seen in my life. He holed about a 50 or 60 footer. And after, let's see, that was after I hit a little bunker shot in there about 8 feet or so. And so, might have even been longer than that. It was an extremely long putt from all the way up the back of the green. And I managed to make that 8 foot putt on top of him. And so, my younger brother John and Tim are real close friends, and so whenever I meet Tim, we kind of talk fondly about that day.
That's awesome. Ken, you qualified and played on the tour in 1991. Was it a matter of your game just kind of kept getting better and better? Can you kind of talk about kind of the lead up to, to that, and then ultimately playing on the tour?
Well, after I was 3 years at Wakanda as an assistant, and then I worked for Jack Webb until the time he retired. And then And then after that, that my game started to get a little better, so I really started to pursue, going to Q school. I made it to the finals of Q school, 5 years in a row.
Okay.
And yeah, I missed it by a mile a couple of times. I came pretty close a couple of times. And finally, on the fifth time, I did get through Q school. I got my card at PGA West, and then off we go. Mm-hmm. My wife Connie and my son Brian, who was one at the time, pretty much traveled the country in our conversion van. Mm-hmm. We drove to most of the tournaments, and I think I made 12 or 13 cuts out of 30 tournaments, and definitely have my ups and downs. And then lost my card, and then the following year we played the Ben Hogan Tour. I think I played 24 or 25 events on the Ben Hogan Tour, which is now the Corn Ferry. And mm-hmm. So played a couple full years trying to make a living playing golf, and just kind of was on the wrong side of that fine line, which, I think that year Corey Pavin was the leading money winner. I think he made somewhere around $975,000 for the season,
mm-hmm.
which now I think there's some tournaments you can win that much money finishing second one week,
But I agree. Yes.
But had a lot of fun out there playing on the tour and played with a lot of great players. Got into contention a couple of times. But I think my best finish was tied for 14th. It was done in Chattanooga, which was kind of an event that was same week as the British Open, so the very best players weren't there. We definitely had some great times, following the tour. It's not what it used to be. Mm-hmm. When I grew up in Waterloo, the guys who were playing golf were the guys who couldn't make the football team. And that's
okay.
It's one of the biggest things really that's changed since I was growing up. Now we've got, you got athletes playing golf mm-hmm. at a young age, and they're definitely more, physically fit. There was hardly, even when I was playing on tour, hardly any of the players were really big into workout programs, maybe mm-hmm. a couple of players here and there, but there just wasn't that element when I was competing, where now, the players are bigger, they're stronger, they're incredibly physically fit, they're hitting it so much further. I remember with John Daly went through Q school the same year I did. And I think his driving distance average was somewhere around, I think the number is 288 yards was his driving distance average.
Okay.
You take that average now, and it's that average, I think, is going to be
probably low.
The average tour player, maybe even a little below average.
Yeah.
And at 288, he was the longest hitter out there by a wide margin. I was lucky enough to play with John probably close to 20 times out there. They pair the rookies with the rookies.
Okay.
And I played with him on at least three events, the first two rounds that I know of, that I can remember, and then a number of practice rounds. But I was pretty floored at how far he could fly the ball in the air.
Ken, that kind of leads me into a question. I was kind of curious if you had some stories or guys that you played with, maybe more than just a couple times that you remember while out on tour.
Well, I was lucky enough to play with some really great players, great guys. I played with Fred Couples, not in competition, but we were playing out of the same course in Florida at the same time.
Okay.
Got to play with him a couple of times. I played a practice round with Tom Watson one day at the PGA. oh gosh, I played with Corey Pavin and Nick Price. I got to play with Nick on Sunday in Las Vegas, and that was a big thrill. I think we were both tied for about 20th going into the final round. He played one of the most incredible rounds I've seen as far as bunker play goes. I remember that he had it in five greenside bunkers, and he got every one of them up and down except for the shot he holed out of that bunker. So I think he shot 63 or four the last day and finished right up there in the top five. Really had an enjoyable time playing with him. And I've been really lucky with some of the guys I've been able to play with. I actually got to play with Tiger Woods once when Tiger was 16 years old.
Oh, wow.
There was a tournament, a junior tournament that time. They called it the Big Eye.
Sponsored
by the insurance. It was called the Insurance Youth Classic. And this was at the University of Michigan course. And they took some players who had missed the cut at the PGA Championship. See, the juniors in this tournament got paired with a PGA Tour pro on Sunday. And so they flew all these players in that missed the cut at the PGA. And I remember we got there late at night, and we were kind of congregated in the bar at this hotel, and they came out with the pairing sheets. And sure enough, I'm paired with this Tiger Woods, who had already, started to make a name for himself. And kind of a funny story on the first tee. The juniors played one tee up from where they had us, the tour players. Tiger gets up and he just rips one right down the middle of the fairway, and he looks back at me and he says, "Go get it, pro." And I'm coming off like I'm not playing real well at this time. I'm coming off about three missed cuts in a row, I think, and wasn't tremendously confident, but I managed to get it around pretty good that day. I think I shot 71, and Tiger did not have his best stuff that day. He had actually kind of a tough day. He shot 77 or 78, I think, and his dad was following him around. He wasn't maybe behaving his best out there, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
I had a good day with the putter. I remember Tiger came up to me and he said, "Say, do you guys all putt this good?" And I said, "Yeah, most of us really do." And he kind of took that in, and you see the kind of putter he became. You could just tell that he was going to be such a great player. One thing I remember about Tiger at that time, he was, I don't know, maybe 6'1" or so. He couldn't have weighed more than like 140 pounds at that time. Yeah. He was just like a bean pole, He just was bombing his driver out there, just still pretty prodigious even back then. And so it was fun.
So what year would that have been?
That would have been 1991.
Okay. Yeah. So early in Tiger's career, but he was, that was right about when he was, kind of making his runs at, juniors and mm-hmm. that stuff. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So heavy down here, you played in seven PGA championships and two US Opens. What do you remember from those?
Well, here's kind of a funny story I like to tell about the first Open I played in.
Okay.
This was one of the very first tour events I played in, was the Open, the US Open in 1989 at Oak Hill.
Okay.
And, great old Donald Ross Golf Course in Rochester, New York. Curtis Strange won the Open that year, but I remember this like it was yesterday. It was the most nervous I've ever been over a golf shot. It was actually in a practice round. On the Wednesday practice round, I was all scheduled to play with Hal Sutton and Mark McCumber. And I remember I was at the range for a couple hours and I just decided to walk down to the first tee about 15 minutes early. There was probably 6,000 or 7,000 or 8,000 people right on the first tee in the grandstands. And back then they even kind of announced your name in the practice round. But, mm-hmm. So I'm walking down the hill to the first tee and standing on the tee is Lee Trevino, who was a huge crowd favorite because he won the U.S. Open at Oak Hill in 1968. Mm-hmm. You had Nick Faldo, Devi Ballesteros, Bernhard Langer, and Sandy Lyle. And I thought,
that's probably a majority of the top 10 players in the world right there.
These are the best players in the world right here. Curtis Strange was right in there and Greg Norman was too, mm-hmm. but you're probably looking at maybe five out of the top seven best players in the world. Yep. And so I thought this is great. I'll just watch these guys tee off. And I'm, you know, as I'm walking down this hill, Trevino looks up at me. He goes, "Hey, you got a game?" And I couldn't believe he was actually, you know, he's making jokes. He says, "You know, I don't want to play with these guys. I just, you know, I'm just by myself." And so I wasn't really ready for that, you know?
Right. And, sure.
Well, he hits and they announce my name, Ken Shaw from AH Blank Municipal in Des Moines, Iowa. And I get up to address my tee shot. Now everybody in this crowd knows how nervous I am.
Okay. Sure.
These players definitely do. And I was seriously worried that I wasn't going to be able to get my ball on the tee because my hand was shaking so bad. Uh-huh. And so I managed to do that. And I'm addressing this ball. And Seve Ballesteros walks over and just kind of messing with me. And he stands within a foot of my golf ball, you know. Uh-huh. So I look up and here's Seve Ballesteros, you know, this towering figure,
uh-huh.
looking, you know, right on top of me as I'm trying to hit this tee shot. And I just said a little prayer, just, "God, just please let me make contact with this ball," you know, period.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, adrenaline's a wonderful thing, I guess, because I just absolutely bombed this tee shot. You know, my ball goes into the left rough, which is fine with me. I was just so happy to get that ball off the tee.
Right,
and I just
practically
run off this tee. And Trevino catches up to me and he goes, "Man, I'll bet you're glad to get that one out of the way." And and he couldn't have been nicer. It was, you know, we played the whole day together. And the European players there played behind us. And so we had an enormous crowd following our two groups. That was the best thing that could have happened to me because, I mean, the first round of the Open was a breeze compared to that round. And I shot 72 in the first round. It was, I don't know, I was up there in the top 25 or so. But, mm-hmm. but he showed me some shots around the greens. I think he particularly liked the fact that I was, you know, was at a Muni golf course, you know, that's mm-hmm. kind of his upbringing too. But.
Well, that reminds me, and I don't know that a lot of people know this because I didn't know this, but Lee Trevino played almost every day with Bob Moreland, who's also in our Iowa yes. Golf Hall of Fame down in Ottumwa. That's a pretty neat connection.
Of course I knew Bob at that time. Bob okay. was one of the strongest players in our section.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, and Lee Trevino, of course, do you know Bob Moreland? And mm-hmm. so he talked about Bob. Yeah, they played a lot of golf together. And Lee Trevino considered Bob Moreland as one of the best ball strikers he'd ever seen.
Yes. Yep. So, Ken, you're out on tour for a little while, and then you come back to Sunnyside Country Club there in Waterloo. That had to be pretty special for you, I'm guessing.
It was. You know, that job came available, and it was, you know, it was my first job as a head golf professional. At that time, I was, teaching at Wakanda,
okay.
Kind of an independent contractor. And I was also coaching the Drake golf team. I was the interim coach for a year and, got to coach, Zach Johnson during his senior year. And the job came available at Sunnyside and so moved back to Waterloo. I was there for 7 years and helped run that club. Sunnyside is still to this day one of my very favorite golf courses.
And you probably don't remember this, but that's when I first met you when I was an intern at the IGA back in 2003. You were at Sunnyside and I can't remember what event we had there, but I first met you at Sunnyside, so I always remember uh-huh. you from there, and I'm glad we've been able to stay in touch, and now I'm with IGA. It's been a good thing. So Ken, you had a lot of success on on the section, a lot of section events, four-time PGA section champion, four-time PGA match play champion, 1998 PGA Northern Regional champion, seven-time Iowa PGA Player of the Year. Can you just talk about just how much fun that is playing with, all the guys from, on the section, and you're competing with each other, but at the same time, it's just good camaraderie, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's just such a great brotherhood with our PGA professionals. Our section events are usually held on a Monday. And so, I love to get away and still compete with those guys. I'm not as strong a player as I used to be, but I still just absolutely love getting out there. There's so many good players around the state and in our section, both professionally and amateur wise, we're totally blessed with the quality of the players we have, and also the tournament programs, both on, our section has a really good tournament program, and the IGA has they've expanded their program. I remember when I was growing up as an amateur playing in the, I think there was seven or maybe six or seven, eight, mm-hmm. major tournaments that we'd look towards. And, that played a big part in my development as a player, just being able to compete with such good players around the state. And that still exists even today.
Ken, you phenomenal player, but also a lot of people know you, and this is kind of how I first knew you too, just a great teacher of the game. Do you look back kind of where maybe that passion started? Does it go back all the way to kind of the mentors that you had growing up that you mentioned, or do you kind of remember where you really dug into to teaching and were able to, have a lot of success with that?
Well, I really started teaching a lot when I was at Blank. Now, I went okay. from being an assistant to Wakanda to kind of being running Blank for a couple of years, and then just teaching on my own and playing section events and state opens and mini tours and that sort of thing. But I, started teaching, I guess, just as probably a way to fund my playing, okay. And so, I learned a lot about teaching from JD Turner. I didn't take a lot of instruction or I didn't take lessons as a kid at all. Like I say, we grew up in Waterloo. There's so many good players around. You just kind of look at the best players and you try to swing like them. Mm-hmm. everybody wanted to swing like Jack Rule, and that's what I tried to do too, But then I'll tell you, another guy from Waterloo, is a guy by the name of Mike Bender, who
sure.
has turned out to be one of the best teaching professionals in the country. He was National Teacher of the Year. And, Mike was one of the, and so when I first started playing mini tour events, we would travel with Mike a little bit here and there, and we play in the same tournaments. And Mike was extremely knowledgeable about the golf swing and a great player in his own right. And so, I learned a lot of teaching, learned a lot about teaching from Mike as well, Mike and JD Turner. And so that's kind of that, those two just had a big influence on my teaching too. JD was such a great teacher and such a great communicator too. And, I really love to teach a lot. We built our business around teaching and club fitting, but I'm just so lucky that I get to work with so many good young players, probably close to 40 college players right now, and high school players from all around the state, and so I just really feel blessed, that I'm able to pass some of this on to some of these kids and watch them develop, and just it just really, really is a blessing to be able to do that.
What would you tell, you know, a kid that's, you know, wanting to get better? I mean, and I think I know what you're going to say, but, you know, a kid that's, you know, wanting to take that next step, what do they need to do?
Well, it, number one, you got to make it fun. That's mm-hmm. for sure. You know, that's one thing that Jack Nicklaus always said too, you know, it's golf is a game. That's all it really is. And if you know, of course we want to get better. We want to play as high level as we can, you know, but it's still just a game. The way I figure golf is, I think that the tee to green game, you know, your tee shots, your second shots are about 1/3 of the game. You know, I think the short game, you know, all your shots from inside 60 yards, including your putter, is about another third. And then the other third is what you have between your ears, you know, what you have in your heart, you know, how, you know, your mental approach to the game, you know, how good you want to get, your desire, how hard you're willing to work. And, you know, it's just the best players seem to have a nose for the cup. You know, this game is still, last I checked, this game is still all about getting that ball around the golf course in as few strokes as possible, you know. And the best players, they learn how to score, and it just takes a fair amount of time to get to the point where you can actually post a good score, even on those days where you're not hitting it so well. That's the mark of a great player. That's what I try to impress upon my students, you know, that you got to understand your limitations, what you can and you can't do. You got to have good course management and, of course, you know, good fundamentals, you know.
So. Ken, if there's a player out there, I guess any age that's wanting to get a hold of you, where can they find you? Why don't you give us your website and all that good stuff?
I'm easy to find. The website is kenshallgolf.com, and Shall spelled S-C-H-A-L-L. We have, we have myself and a couple of other really good instructors here, Sam Reith and Rice and Seth Sveda, two really good young instructors that work for us. And we have our studio in West Des Moines, but we also kind of have a satellite studio at an outdoor studio at Echo Valley Country Club. And so that's also where we have our mobile club fitting unit. Yeah, I'm easy to find. Our numbers listed on the website, and we're here to help golfers get better.
Awesome. Well, Ken, I appreciate you taking some time with us and coming on the podcast, and happy holidays, and look forward to seeing you in 2023.
Thanks, Clint. Thanks for all you do for the game of golf.
You're welcome. Talk to you later.